Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q4 FY22 earnings conference call of Godrej Consumer Products Limited, hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Aniket Sethi from ICICI Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Steven. Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining. At ISEC, it's our pleasure to host the senior management team of Godrej Consumer Products Limited for their 4Q FY22 earnings call. I will hand it over to Mr. Pratik Dantara for the future proceedings. Thank you, and over to you, Pratik.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome to the conference call. We'll be covering this evening the results for the quarter ended 31st March 2022. On the call with me from GCPL is Mr. Bud Godrej, Executive Chairperson, Sudhir Sitapati, Managing Director and CEO, and Sameer Shah, CFO. We'll start with Sudhir talking about our performance. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Pratik. Good evening, everyone. I hope you and your families are safe and healthy, and thank you for joining us on the call today. I'll first start with an update of our quarterly performance. We've had a weak quarter in Q4 FY22 with a few silver linings. While our overall sales grew by 7% and we achieved double-digit sales growth for the year, the growth within the quarter was driven entirely by pricing. Our overall EBITDA without an inventory theft in South Africa de-grew by 9%, driven by unprecedented global commodity inflation and scale leverage, deleverage in Indonesia. PAT without exceptions declined by  4%. Our core geography of India grew top line at 9% with a two-year CAGR of 21%. While the sales was largely driven by pricing and UVG was down by 3%, on a two-year CAGR basis, UVG grew by 12%, and on a three-year basis, it grew by about 2%. The silver lining in India, however, has been that EBITDA grew by 14% with EBITDA margins expanding by 100 BPS. This points to our ability to take measured price hikes to counter inflation. However, the recent inflation brought about by the Ukraine crisis will hit our P&L majorly only in Q1, and we again expect a relatively sharp drop for this quarter. Indonesia delivered a particularly weak performance with sales declining at 15% and operating EBITDA at minus 48. This has been driven by tough market conditions, the sharp fall in COVID-19 related categories, and a big reduction in our inventory in modern trade and distributors. Poor sales compounded by the cost inflation and a 200 BPS investment in ATL, which we continued despite the gross margin falls, has meant that the EBITDA drop has been precipitous. The silver lining here is that there are early signs of the Indonesian market recovering. For instance, our offtake growth without Saniter, our COVID portfolio and accounts where we get data, is much better than primaries and has started to grow. With our strong market position, media increases resulting in recent share gains and our determination to reduce our trade pipelines, we expect things to start improving from Q3 FY23. Both LATAM and Africa witnessed strong growth, with LATAM growing upwards of 30% and Africa growing in the mid-teens. Africa, however, had very poor margins due to an unfortunate theft of inventory in South Africa. The growth flywheel in Africa has started to move, but we need to simplify our business and significantly strengthen governance and controls to prevent a recurrence of this unfortunate event. LATAM has performed extremely well on both top line and bottom line. Our pre-hyperinflation EBITDA has now crossed 20%, and we generate close to 80 crores of cash in this business in FY22. In terms of categories, while market growth continues under pressure, market shares are broadly good, and there's nothing new to report. Our prognosis for FY23 remains broadly unchanged from what I spoke to you last quarter. We anticipate double-digit top-line growth with low single-digit volume growth. Bottom line is hard to predict, but if costs moderate to 6,000 MYR for palm oil, about 7 to 8% lower than where they are today and $100 for crude, we should see some margin expansion, especially in the second half of the year. Our personal view, however, is that palm oil may moderate even further, and that is generally good news for us. Our game plan is to grow category development driven by relevance, access, and marketing investments and funded by a digitally enabled simplification of our organization. We have a slew of category developments in Q1, which we believe will dramatically build relevance of our categories. A few that we've launched in April and May are that in hair color, we are the market leaders with more than 1/4 of the market. In India, more than half the category operates between 10 and 15 rupees. In April, we've launched Godrej Expert Rich Cream at 15 rupees to drive penetration of the creme format by recruiting the early grey consumer living in middle and rural India and accelerating new trials with first-time users. We are backing this with increased media investment, large-scale visibility, and leveraging our distribution reach. Another big initiative that we have taken is in household insecticide, where we have dropped the price of Jumbo Fast Card from 15 rupees to 10 rupees to drive recruitment in the category, as nearly a third of new triers are entering the category through incense sticks. Again, we are backing this with media investments and on-ground activations. We will be happy to share more of our category development initiatives in Q1 because some of them will only happen in June and July in our next meeting. Our journey on simplification is another silver lining and is making good progress, and the category that we created in Q3 FY22 is yielding early results. Our cost to serve, which is a measure that we look at, which is total costs minus material costs minus working media, which material costs and working media are what we serve, everything else is a cost to serve, is down by 250 BPS in Q4. When costs stabilize, this will give us significant fuel for growth and digital transformation. But investments are only part of the story in digital transformation. People and culture are more important, and towards that we are making 2 senior appointments of people with significant experience in digital transformation. Akhil Chandra, business head for Indonesia and ASEAN, has decided to pursue an opportunity outside Godrej. Rajesh Sethuraman will be joining us to take over from Akhil as the CEO of ASEAN from July 1st. Rajesh has spent 21 years at HUL and Unilever, leading teams across categories and divisions in South Asia and Africa to deliver significant value for the business. In his previous role, he led Unilever's execution of its largest digital transformation program across Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. We are also appointing Vijay Kannan as the head of business transformation and digital for GCPL. Vijay will report to me and serve on the Global Management Committee. He is currently the Global Chief Information and Digital Officer of Shell's $20 billion lubricants business and has had past experience as HUL's IT head and prior to that in Asian Paints. Vijay's brief is simple. If we were a digital-first company, how would we dramatically look at reducing our cost to serve? Thank you very much. I'm very happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sudhir. Thanks. My first question is on hair dye pricing in India. So we have seen the creme hair color pricing in India remain in that 25 to 30 rupee for many years in India. And now we have come out with a disruptive pricing at INR 15. So 2-3 questions here. One is, how do you drive average revenue per user per here? Last 5 years, I have not seen much movement here. Second is, how do you take care of cannibalization from the INR 15 product? And third is, competitive intensity and parlor presence remains a key work in progress. So if you could discuss that also. Thank you.
Yeah, Abneesh, thanks for that question. I think there are two, three things. One is, you know, the penetration of the hair cream category is sub 20% in India. And as I said in the last two meetings, one of our jobs is to drive market development. And category after category, you will see that access has been a key driver of category penetration. So I would say that generally what we observe when we bring access into a category is penetration goes up pretty exponentially and frequency of use also goes up in general. So I'm anticipating both of these happening. There is a pretty clear use case that we discovered for this, which is, you know, we are communicating it, which is the first silver hair or touch up. There are a lot of consumers who have just got early silver hair or a short crop of hair like men, for whom we were anyway noticing that the 30 rupee pack had, you know, was being used two times. So we feel that there's a unique case. In general, then, you know, I don't know if there might be some cannibalization, Abneesh, but these are fast growing markets. And I anticipate that the 30 rupee product will continue to grow, albeit at a slightly slower pace. And we hope that the access that we create into the category will drive a lot of growth. I mean, to your point on salons and so on and so forth, we have an excellent professional business that is growing really well, and we target salons in B and C. So we're covering our base, and that's one of our fastest growing parts of our business. It's a small part, but growing really fast. But the opportunity in India is enormous for a category like this to grow for many years, and I hope this move will reignite growth in the category.
Sure, that's useful. My second and last question is on the Africa business margins. If you could quantify the impact from inventory pilferage and what are the checks and balances you are ensuring that it doesn't stay recur in South Africa or any other international geography? And how do you see Africa margins in the near term and medium term? Because my sense is this item will not recur. It's a one-off. But how do you see in the next 50 quarters time horizon?
Hey, Abneesh, this is Sameer here. Yes, I think a couple of things. One is we will put in stronger, you know, checks and balances, including, say, something like third-party physical verification happening, you know, every quarter, as well as work on strengthening both our business processes as well as internal controls to avoid this recurrence in future, so that, you know, something like this doesn't recur, you know, again. In terms of margins, just to give you a bridge, I mean, if you look at the overall margins, including this pilferage, the drop is actually close to around 900 basis points. 300 bips is because of pilferage, or maybe 350 bips is because of pilferage. 250 bips is because of upfront marketing and route to market initiatives in some of the countries where growth has been, I would say, you know, quite strong. And that's something which we remain extremely confident of, even in the coming quarters and years. The rest, I would say 300-350 basis points would be because of lag between increase in input prices and end consumer prices, which we will mitigate through price increase. To answer your question, I think there should not be, you know, margin deterioration in Africa, at least on a full year basis, in FY23. If any, I mean, we should continue to be on the trajectory of gradual, you know, margin expansion on a YOY basis, even in FY23.
I mean, Avneesh, despite this, you know, we have kind of improved our margins in FY22, and a combination, I mean, it's a difficult time even there because of input prices, but a combination of the increasing salience of FMCG and the growth leverage that we're getting on our businesses because they're growing fast, we expect broadly kind of moderate margin improvement to continue on the second, in the medium to long term.
Okay, that's very useful. That's all from my side.
Thanks. Thanks, Avneesh.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just wanted to understand some of your initiatives. So this creme which is launched at 15, what is the difference between that and the basic product you have at 30-35? Is it just a lesser quantity of creme, or is the product itself different?
No, it's just a sachet. I mean, it's the same brand, so it's just the principle of a sachet which makes it more accessible for a certain cohort of consumers in small town rural India with a short crop of hair. So it's just a...
It's basically a lesser grammage of the same product. You still have inside two separate sachets which have to be mixed and so on.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And I also wanted to understand launch of Good Night Active Plus at rupees 80. Again, here also, is it a different product from your base product, or is it just a smaller or lesser grammage product compared to the original one?
No, I think Good Night Active Plus, you know, we always had a flanker brand on Good Night in some markets. And Good Night Active is just a flanker brand in a few markets that we operate, which we think are price sensitive. So it is not a smaller pack or anything like that. It is, in fact, we were always selling Good Night Active Plus, and the refill we had, and we just brought back the machine in a few markets where there was demand and where we felt we needed a flanker.
Okay, but is there any difference in the product itself, or it's just basically that those markets cannot sustain the normal price point and therefore you want to sell at a lower price point but you don't want to ruin the brand and therefore you're launching a flanker?
No, the Gold Flash is a value-added product compared to the Active Plus.
Right, right. Understood. So there is a difference in the product itself.
Yes.
Okay. So just a quick one on the HI strategy. It seems that while you said you will announce more initiatives, still now whatever initiatives you've done is just basically trying to lower the price points and therefore make the product more accessible. So in your opinion, do you think the major roadblock for growth in this category is that, affordability, is that the major thing? Because we have products like coils, for example, available in a single piece at very, very low price points, and still the penetration is where it is. So do you think that the reason is something else and not affordability or a price point?
No, Percy, I think that price point is only one part of it. I do think the reason is something else, but I think in the interest of confidentiality, perhaps we can discuss this in the next analyst meeting. We will do something quite soon here, but I'm only talking about things that we've already done, which is in the public domain. You'll understand that it's not proper for me to publicly talk about what we will do. But we're not running away from the issue that we are the market leaders of household insecticide. My own hypothesis is that the category needs development. And often, you know, to speak in general terms, Percy, the three things that drive category development are relevance, access, and sampling. So in the case of Creme, that is an example of access. But, you know, across these three dimensions in all the categories, let me give you an example of relevance on something that we have just launched. So again, I can feel free to talk about it. On air, which is our, air freshener business in India and Indonesia, we have recently relaunched air with the proposition of when guests come home. That's an example of relevance building, where you're not just saying that the air freshener smells good, you're saying why you should enter the category, which is when guests come home. So that's an example of relevance, and there'll be plenty of examples of other things that I'll be able to talk to you as and when we launch it in the market.
Right. But at this point of time, are you at liberty to discuss which of these three is the most the one which you need to address the most in HI, or it's too premature to talk about that as well?
I think once we do it, we'll talk about it, because why talk about something that isn't there, right? I think, see, in general, all these three are important for category development, and all of them we will work at, even in hair. There's a relevance there, which is the first silver hair. That is what we're communicating. There is access. And, you know, on sampling as and when we do it. So we'll discuss HI in a little bit more detail the next quarter on what our game plan is. And maybe we can talk more comprehensively what we're doing once we've done it in the market.
Sure. And last question from my side, the illegal incense sticks, which was a huge problem earlier, and then as COVID came, supplies were disrupted, etc. Now, where does that product stand in terms of market share? Is it at pre-COVID levels? And I mean, if you can give some data on that in terms of market share, what it was pre-COVID, how much did it fall to at the trough, and what it stands at today?
So, you know, yeah, it's roughly where it was pre-COVID. It's not growing at the rapid pace that it was growing pre-COVID, at least in the post-COVID phase, but it's still there and it's still growing. And it's still, frankly, you know, something that consumers shouldn't use. And one of the reasons that what we have done, which is to drop the price of fast card from 15 to 10 is so that people at the same price point as incense stick get a safer legal solution.
Right, understood. So it's at about 12% if memory serves, the market share?
Yeah, I mean, as Sudhir mentioned, Percy, it's close to pre-COVID levels, but yeah, it's hovering around, I think, 13-14% mark.
Okay, okay. That's all from me. Thanks and all the best.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Priyam Daga from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. My question was regarding the raw material side of the insecticides business. So I wanted to understand what kind of raw materials are used in this business.
We use actives, we use chemicals.
And crude link, I mean indirect material.
Yeah, indirect link is crude, but yeah.
Alright, alright. And my second question was regarding the SI strategy, as you answered. So here, what are we doing? So I understand that you cannot disclose all of it right now, but I wanted to understand how are you trying to penetrate deeper into the rural areas, and how is the demand in the rural side effect?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's the same answer that I gave Percy, which is I can tell you how we're thinking about it, which is relevance, access, and sampling. And an example of access is bringing down the price of Jumbo Fast Car from 15 to 10, of which we're seeing very good results since we've done it, a month and a half ago. And we'll come back to you specifically with what we're doing in these dimensions in the next few months, because what we've done in April and May is we've acted on hair color. We've made a big intervention in air care, largely in the area of relevance and kind of just increasing the media salience. I hope you see some of our advertising both on Pocket, which is we use for bathroom, but we're also very excited with the living room format, which in our Indonesian market is our second biggest SKU. So we believe that has terrific potential in India. Without doing any kind of marketing, it was anyway growing very fast. And now we anticipate with marketing, it will grow even faster.
All right. And one more question I have regarding the Indonesia business. So what have we done to turn around the business? As you have mentioned in the call, what changes are we having there that the business is turning around?
See, the business, the big change that we made from about November onwards or December onwards was to increase our media support. See, that is a business which has very high gross margins and high EBITDA, but relatively low ATL. And our strategy there is to increase our ATL, which we have done. And as a combination, both, I think, of the Indonesian markets, also the sense I get is that I don't think it's out of the woods, but there's certainly a lot of positive news is coming out of Indonesia in terms of categories starting to grow again. But also in terms of our own market shares, we're seeing some movements. Unfortunately, it's going to take, you know, another two quarters, which is this quarter and the next, for it to show in terms of sales. Because the truth is, over the last 2-3 years, the markets also shrank, and you know, we built up inventory through our pipelines.
All right. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Alok Shah from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So then my first question is essentially, what Percy also asked. So one is what you mentioned on the relevance, access, etc. on the SI. I also wanted to check with you that are you also working on the efficacy? Because, you know, while relevance and penetration, to my mind, I mean, you know, consumer is fairly aware of Goodknight as a brand. But maybe, you know, the incremental recruitment may need some kind of tweaks in terms of the efficacy of the product. So wanted to get your views on the same, if possible now.
But I just prefer to answer, if you don't mind. I'm not ducking it or anything, but why don't we discuss the HR strategy? I'm happy to talk about air and hair care because it's in the market now. I mean, HR also because, you know, season starts in June, really, with the monsoon coming in. So a lot of our action will, you know, is just some time away. So perhaps that's a better time to talk rather than, you know, as a discipline.
But I think efficacy is an ongoing, efficacy is something that we're always working on, right? From the active, what actives can we register and use and what products. So I think that's a strength of GCPL. So that's, you know, and we're always upgrading our products also.
Okay. My second question was that, you know, the presentation mentions about, you know, gaining share in 85% of the categories in domestic business. So, you know, just want to check that, are there pockets of oil and hair color where we could be losing or you know, those are small categories where we may not be gaining share?
No, I don't think that is it. I think in liquid detergents, the market is, you know, we have Easy, which is a specialist wash, and we define the market as liquid detergents, and a lot of main wash is entering liquid detergents. So I think it's more mathematical than anything else. So actually, if you ask me in spirit, it's 100%.
Okay, got it. And lastly, just a clarification to, you know, the explanation on the EBITDA margin for Africa. So what I understand is while the reported EBITDA margins down some 600-650 odd basis point, overall it is 900, but the 200 or 300 odd related to theft would not get factored in because it would be exceptional. Is that understanding correct?
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much and wish you good luck.
Thanks.
A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Kundu from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. My question was on, you know, we have seen very intense summers this time around. Which are the categories which will get, benefited? And how has been the initial, response? How has been the initial to the intense summer for you?
You're talking of quick commerce?
Summer has been, you know, intense. So which categories can benefit?
Summer, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I mean, it benefits soap. It generally, very, very hot periods are not in favor of household insecticide, but it's anyway, May is not peak season for us. But soap, it will benefit.
And have you seen any benefit of that in your EAR as well? Or it has been more of, the initiatives taken by you that is driving demand? Because as per our channel checks, even EAR has done very well, during April and May.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, look, a lot of the initiatives that I spoke about, which is basically on hair color, on air, we rolled out in April. And I can just say that the initial results are as per expectation. Again, you know, we can talk about results next quarter. But certainly these are powerful category development initiatives and we're very bullish about how they work for us.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Trilok from Diamond Asia. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted to ask when the initial comment that you highlighted, you know, that even the Q1 seems to be a little constrained in terms of margins. Are you referring to, you know, further sort of, pressure beyond what we've already seen? Or, you know, qualitative comment on that, that'll be helpful.
See, the Ukraine crisis started about 3 months ago, right, which is in the middle of last quarter. And at that time, last quarter, we were still sitting on older price stocks. So, you know, we've kind of managed EBITDA. Now, this new inflation will take us a little bit of time to adjust to. So, I mean, I'm not overly worried about it, but certainly, you know, palm today is quoting at 6,500 MYR. it had gone to close to 7,500 pre-Ukraine, it was 5,500. So it's somewhere in between its peak and what it was pre-Ukraine. 5.5 itself is a high price. So the new stock that comes in is coming in at higher costs. We will, of course, judiciously do. And I think that you all should have enough confidence given our India margin performance last quarter, despite all the difficulties we faced everywhere else, that we are able to kind of, over a period of time, do.
Yeah, but obviously today only that ban has been lifted, so probably that could also bring some relief, you know, hopefully. And what kind of pricing actions you have taken at the portfolio level to mitigate this inflation so far?
No, that will be,
if you just look at Q4 Trilok, I think the UPG is close to around 12% wage, right?
So, no, I'm talking about, you know, in the month of in this quarter we are talking about, because what has already been done is done, right?
Yeah, so I think incrementally we keep on taking, you know, price increases, especially in personal wash portfolio. It's difficult to aggregate and call out as to what it will be, because some has got executed, some will get executed as we speak. But directionally, my sense is the UPG will go up in Q1 as compared to what it was in Q4 at overall portfolio level.
Sharing in pricing, we can't, I think like all companies, frankly, you know, we have to take judicious price increase. One is we can't shock consumers, so we got to do it. And two is for speculative costs, we can't price. So if there's a speculative cost, like for example, palm at 7,500 and all, we always knew. And now if what you're saying, I didn't know that Indonesia ban has been lifted today. But it will be good news for us. But, you know, in the short term, these things are, we can't react to them in pricing in the short term for very speculative and business continuity. When we have to buy, we have to buy. So I think you just have to look at it in that context.
Sure, understood. And just last, you know, from a new, you know, kind of pricing accessibility in both the categories that you alluded to, is it fair to assume that those will not be, you know, I mean, gross margin dilutive or something of that sort? Because obviously penetration is important, but yeah, wanted to hear a thought on that.
So, I mean, you know, I think the important thing in this business, as I said, is to drive volume growth. I think we have very healthy EBITDAs in this business, and, you know, we will, our objective is not to drop that, but our objective is primarily to get category volume growth in first. And you must remember that some of these categories, you know, like hair color, are not operated anyway very high gross margins. So they're actually, even if they're dilutive to the category, they're accretive to the company very often. But I would still say that gross margin is super important, but volume growth for us and category development is more important.
Sure. Thank you. I'll come back in queue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Krishnan Sambamurthy from Motilal Oswal Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Sudhir. As part of your strategy discussion in December, you had highlighted two things. Both are related, so I'll take both of them. One was the relative inability to drive category development, for which initiatives have been taken, as you've highlighted. The other thing that you had highlighted was high complexity with too many SKUs. Anything that you want to highlight on that front and work that has been done so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, complexity is there in the, I mean, I had said that, you know, one of the strengths of the organization is innovation and R&D and our ability to drive new products. And I hope I can speak about a few of them next quarter. And one of our weaknesses is complexity, and complexity is in SKUs, but in many other areas. I mean, let me give you an example of Air, right, which is the communication that we have done, which is when guests come home, you should have Air, and maybe at some point we can send it across to all of you, the communication. We've done exactly the same communication with no changes in Indonesia and India in Bahasa. Now, that's a reduction in complexity, right, because two people were working on it, two advertising agencies were working on it, two people were producing the film. I mean, it's just an illustrative example of reduction of complexity. So SKU complexity reduction is on, and it is it's an ongoing process and a pretty sharp one at that. But there are many areas of complexity like this one, where when the same advertising works across the world, why spend money and, you know, complicate life by having different things? So there's very much a war on complexity and simplification that is going on across for us.
Very clear. Thanks, Sudhir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avi Mehta from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify, you know, just on the near-term margin bit, and if I heard you correctly, on FY23, you are essentially, would it be fair to argue for a pickup in the second half at the EBITDA level? But that would mean that the earlier comment of sequential EBITDA margin expansion is no longer valid. Was that the correct read-through from your statement?
No, I think what I said, and I think Samir will clarify, is that if costs, even if we're conservative with costs, we expect some slight margin improvement in FY23 over FY22. And if costs go to where we hope or where we think they will go to, it may even be better than that. But that's what I read out. Samir, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think that's a clarification, Avi. So, you know, there will be a glide path. I mean, the very short term, I mean, just because of severe commodity inflation, there will be, you know, kind of margins pressure. And by the way, we'll continue to invest for growth. So what I mean, we will also see is, you know, upfront marketing investments for a lot of category development initiatives. But at this point in time, with all the assumptions, even including on commodity, we do believe that FY23 should see, you know, margins expansion. But again, as Sudhir mentioned, the entire focus will be on, you know, sustainable UVG during the course of the year. But yeah, I mean, at this point in time, we do believe that there should be margin expansion in FY23.
Perfect. And just the other bit on Indonesia, would it be also correct to argue that the margin trajectory would mirror the sales trajectory, i.e. when sales growth comes back in third quarter, margins should also move back to the pre-COVID levels?
I think so. I think that's what will happen. As I told you, it may take 2 quarters because the economy, I mean, CPG did contract for 2 years and you know, there are consequences of contraction. But yes, I anticipate there too. Both because of judicious price increases there as well, and because when, you know, growth comes back, we'll get back our leverage.
Leverage. Okay, perfect, perfect. Thank you. And look forward to hearing on the HI side in the next quarter. Thank you.
Thanks, Arun.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Kumar Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. In the opening remarks, you mentioned that you expect palm oil prices to correct by 7-8% and maybe further, you know, also. Can you elaborate on that? Do you have visibility on the output or supply that will come starting June from Indonesia? And if Russia-Ukraine, you know, conflict continues for a longer period and then the supplies from those market of other edible oils, you know, if there is a if that situation continues, do you still feel that palm oil prices will correct by June or September?
See, in the palm oil case, there have been three underlying drivers of price hike. One is even pre-Ukraine, there was a supply-demand mismatch, which I think will correct, and I think is correcting. Two is that there has been the Ukraine crisis and sunflower oil from Ukraine, and three is that the Indonesian ban has further exacerbated the situation. Of these three, we are hoping two will correct. The third one, if it corrects at some point in time, we will get a further upside. But at least one of the three seems to have been corrected already from what, I didn't know this, but someone just mentioned that Indonesia has lifted it. So some slight relief will come there. And I think in May, June, we are anticipating crop and all. So of course, the sunflower pressure continues to be there on Ukraine. If that happens, then it'll go down to, you know, levels we hope for. But we're not planning for that. We think that even somewhere in between that, we'll still be able to eat through.
At this point of time, do you have visibility of the crop that will, you know, from Indonesia, Malaysia, starting June of the new crop?
No, we're not at this point in time. But I think all the early indicators are that there should not be, you know, I mean, supply side, you know, kind of issue, at least from crop plantation, you know, front.
So essentially, the demand-supply mismatch that we saw for two consecutive years hopefully should not continue in the following year.
Well, that's the thinking at this point in time. But, I mean, it's not just in isolation, the palm oil. It's also, I mean, the sunflower oil, right? So there are a lot of linkages, you know, to it. So, yeah, let's see how it goes ahead. But, I mean, if this Ukraine conflict gets resolved, then definitely there will be, you know, further you know, fall in palm oil prices is the hypothesis which we have. Let's see.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurang Kakkad from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So couple of questions. Firstly, on the India business, if you can share some color in between rural and urban growth as to how it is currently panning out.
Yeah, so I think if you look at urban, including alternate channels, the growth has been nearly 1.5x, I mean, of rural, you know, for us. But directionally, we have seen, I mean, because we are relatively under-indexed in rural, our rural growth have been, you know, on the higher side. I mean, in terms of demand trends, it feels like more of the same. I mean, we had called it out last quarter also that even if you look at two-year CAGRs and those trends, nothing much has changed, I mean, between, you know, both the markets.
Okay. Yeah. And secondly, in terms of the Africa business margin, so you've called out the reasons for the margin fall. So leaving aside the one-offs, the two factors, largely RM inflation as well as upfront marketing spends impacting margins by around 600 bits. So largely for the Africa margins, we had an earlier guidance of margins given in FY21 going to around, say, 17-18% in the next 4 to 5 years. So largely, if you look at margins, this year also margins are largely likely to remain in this 11-odd% kind of a range. Then do we stick to that guidance of 500-600 basis points improvement in the next 2-3 years? And what gives us the confidence for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the game plan and nothing much has changed, you know, on that thinking. There could be a year, you know, plus minus in that, you know, journey. As we have called out earlier, I mean, you know, better, you know, favorable category mix, scale play. I mean, a very sharp, you know, kind of control on wasted cost is all what we think should, you know, aggregate to, you know, this margin expansion or better, you know, kind of ROCEs in Africa over a period of time.
No, I think this year also, while this quarter has been exceptional, both because of the one-time loss and because of commodity, Africa business also, by the way, is very crude linked because our dry hair business is, you know, plastic. This year we have had margin expansion of about 100 bips.
On a full year basis.
On a full year basis. So, you know, that journey of 100-150 bips a year, even this year, despite the last quarter we are on, and I mean, this quarter was exceptional both for the pilferage and for the cost increase. So that kind of margin improvement, 100 to 150 bips a year for the next 4-5 years, we anticipate it will continue like it has in FY22.
Right. Thanks. So all those strategy in terms of the 4-5 year guidance of say premiumization, product mix improvement, cost efficiencies, largely those are on track, and you think you can achieve those margins in FY26-27, largely a year or misses fine, but largely we are on track in terms of the guidance.
I think so. I think it was a quarter miss of Q4. I think we were on track to kind of, you know, steadily increase margins in the business to achieve the kind of numbers you're talking about.
Sure. That helps. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avnish Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Sudhir. A few follow-up questions. So first is on e-commerce in India. So we have seen HUL now, for example, get 20% of business digitally, and from e-commerce 7-8%. And many companies are getting that. So where did you peg GCPL in this? And could you also talk about quick e-commerce? How are you placed there? Are you getting some benefits from there? And how do you peg GCPL's presence in quick commerce versus some of your larger competitors?
Yeah, I think on e-commerce, the right way to look at it is not just about salience of our in e-commerce and what is e-commerce salience. I think there are two or three measures that we look at. One is our share within e-commerce, which we're happy with. Two is our findability, you know, on when people search for our categories, and we're quite happy with that. And three is that it must be accretive in terms of margins to our portfolio, which we think there's still work to be done on. That's how I would look at e-commerce. So I think rather than just worry about a salience as a number and just under all circumstances increasing it, I think, like in any other channel, one has to take a balanced view of e-commerce. And of course, it's a rapidly growing channel, and we are participating, and our shares are good there, so we're quite happy with where we are. But that's how we look at it. Quick commerce is doing really well, I mean, in the recent past, and in general, quick commerce definitely benefits short tail, you know, because people, you know, quick commerce inventory is relatively limited to the winners in the category, and in all the categories that we operate in, we're either number one or number two. So we are certainly, from a consumer point of view, what I've heard from consumers is that they're very happy with quick commerce. So we'll have to wait and watch, Avnish. I think the way we have to look at any channel is, as and when a channel emerges, we have to resource for it and make sure that we get fair share within that channel and at the right profitability, right? And I think that, and resource for it, and then let the channel emerge. After all, we don't play a role really in the development of the channel.
Right. My second question is on the changes which have happened at the senior leadership level. In the last 3 years, if I see Africa business, business head came from Nestle. We saw remarkable improvement once he came. Now in Indonesia, AX, Unilever, HUL guy is joining. Sudhir himself obviously from HUL. And now the tech head also from good MNC experience. So my question is there any cultural issue which arises from all these very senior appointments? Because all these appointments are from lateral. So how are you addressing, if any, cultural issue is there? And are most of the senior level appointments done, or you think in the next 1 to 2 years? I'm not asking for any guidance, but just wanted to understand, is the team now in place?
I think, thank you for that question. So I think if we, you know, there's also been a lot of promotions from people internally also. So I just want to, you know, put that out. Sameer has recently taken over CFO. There's a number of senior people who, you know, are doing bigger roles after Sudhir came in. I think our philosophy has been that as much as possible, you know, that we'll have people internally take roles, but where we do not have someone or we want particular expertise, say like in this digital transformation, we will go outside. You know, I think when we select people, we do select them for a cultural and value fit, because otherwise at senior levels, it's very hard for them to come in and operate. So, you know, I know you do see Sudhir as from HUL or Dharnesh from Nestle, but, you know, we do see them as the individual they are, and how will they not just fit into Gojek's culture, but improve it and make it stronger. So I don't think this cultural fit will be an issue. And I think one strong thing that I've always felt about Godrej is that we are relatively humble people and always willing to change and get better. So I think this new talent coming in will be a good refresh. I think we went through this a decade ago. You know, at that time also we had very good high growth and, you know, the company did well. And I think it's time now, you know, to strengthen the leadership team. But, you know, there's equally a number of people who are from within the company also.
Sure, thanks. Just one last follow-up on the Indonesia leadership. So when Africa business head change had happened, within very short time, we saw remarkable improvement in the margins and sales growth both. And obviously, he took a lot of corrective action in the marketing campaigns, more effective. Similarly, in terms of distribution, he did a lot of changes, more deeper distribution, and a lot of analytics usage, etc. So in Indonesia, when you're getting this person from Unilever HUL background, is a similar potential available here, or already most of these things are well run in Indonesia, so that opportunity is not available? I'm not asking on margins or numbers, I'm just asking on the business side, is there a lot of headroom to improve immediately?
No, Avnish, I think, you know, both Dharnesh and now Rajesh are both top class professionals and contribute, but very often these have their own dynamics going on in the market, you know, which are ups and downs. I think what, suffice it to say that, you know, these things have to be looked at in the medium term, and short term is not the right way to look at it. Somebody comes and, you know, puts things right and it starts growing immediately. That rarely happens actually. So I would definitely say that I'm anticipating and hoping that the Indonesian business in the medium term does really well under Rajesh's leadership, just as Guam has done under Dharnesh's.
Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aniket Sethi from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Sudhir, if you can discuss the thought process on divestment of B-Blunt. If I recollect, the company always had ambition in fashion and premium hair colors. Is it part of the business simplification process? And what are the current ambitions for premium hair colors going forward?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you know, B-Blunt's a great brand and it's got a great consumer franchise. I think we have, you know, as we articulated, a drive towards simplification and the core of our business and getting, you know, and most of that is market development of some of the categories, right? So in that, we felt that the home for B-Blunt was probably better somewhere else. So it's just a set of choices that we make. And if you were to ask me, while of course there are examples of premiumization like in Africa, in general, I would say that GCPL over the next few years should focus on category development. That's where the biggest bang for the buck is, and that's really where our focus is, and I'm not sure B-Blunt was a driver of category development of hair color or hair.
And will we focus on the premium part in India, let's say in the next 2 to 3 years?
I mean, look, you know, we have some premium brands like, you know, Synthol and soaps is a premium brand, but I would still say...
We have premium products in the category.
We do have premium products, but I would still say that, you know, some companies, and it's, you know, it's difficult for me to simplify this into like one word, but some companies have this, you know, primary task of premiumization. I think our primary task is category development.
Yeah.
Understood. That's helpful. Second, a small clarification. In the presentation, it's mentioned that you are gaining shares in about 85% of the categories for the India business. So which exactly were the areas where you have lost some share?
I think I mentioned that liquid detergent, mainly because of the definition of liquid detergents, because we are easy as, you know, is basically a specialist okay. Liquid detergent, and it's classified in all of liquid detergent. That is going to continue because, you know, there's a big movement in main wash to move from powders to liquid, and Easy doesn't really participate in main wash in detergents.
Understood. That's clear. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jitendra Arora from ICICI Prudential. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a couple of questions from my side. One, as you alluded to, Africa margins improving on a yearly basis and not being worried about the quarter. Assuming the crude stays where we are, we expect EBITDA margins in Africa to continue to improve for FY23. That's first. Second, on the palm oil, you alluded to three reasons why there has been a spike. So obviously, second and third is something which is event-based and temporary, which is essentially your Ukraine situation or what happened in Indonesia in terms of ban. So I wouldn't worry about that, honestly, because there is very little we can do take it into consideration over a longer period of time. However, the first one, which is essentially the demand supply, there is a increasing blend of palm oil in Indonesia with the crude or for their domestic fuel requirement, which has affected the demand supply equation in the market over the last few years, and that has led to the tightness. How do you see that resolving? Do you see incremental supply from Indonesia to cater to that, or are you seeing other geographic regions which will be stepping up supply given that this new source of demand has been there?
See, I mean, we are always working on blend flex and, you know, various oils and so on and so forth. But I think, you know, the pre-Ukraine, pre-kind of Indonesia export ban, if you look at our India margins in Q4, they give you a good sense that we were, you know, on our way towards solving that. And, you know, by next quarter, this quarter, we would have sorted that out. So even if there is a long-term supply-demand gap in palm oil, our brands and generally soaps is a category which is a relatively small user of palm oil in the larger scheme of things, should be able to manage. I don't think, this category is not going to be the one that gets massively affected by it. It will be able to price up for it.
And about Africa?
I mean, in Africa, as I said before, I think we've seen actually despite, a Q4, which was a one-off, I mean, both in terms of cost and in terms of the pilferage, we've seen margin improvements even in 2022, and we anticipate that to continue because, again, we are at a peak of oil prices. Already oil, has fallen and so on and so forth, and crude also. So there also, we can, it's a bit like our soaps business, we'll gradually take up prices and cover it up. So I do anticipate some kind of moderate margin improvements in Africa as well. If the commodity plays out the way we think it will play out, if there's a further shock and all, none of us know in the volatile world we're living in. But I would say other things being equal, we will continue the journey that we've actually started in FY22.
So essentially what we are saying is that there are enough price actions in place which will ensure that the current commodity costs are passed on.
I mean, certainly it is our intention to improve our margins in Africa, and we are going to work towards that. It is not our intention to go through the numbers that I think we alluded to in the next few years, which is 17-18 EBITDA kind of thing. That's certainly our objective, and I think we've been, with this exception of the previous quarter, we've generally been quite successful also at it.
So, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Priyam Daga from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I needed some clarification on the market share side of it. On an industry-wide basis, some companies have lost degrowth, have had degrown in the beauty and personal care segment, and we have had a strong personal care growth this quarter. So is it fair to assume that we've kind of gained some market share from some of the organized players?
I mean, if 85% of our business is gaining on a match basis, we've certainly gained. I mean, certainly in soaps are doing very well in terms of market share.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pratik for his closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, everyone, for joining the call. If you have any further questions, do reach out to the IR team. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.